When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Put us together, and you've got the podcast duo that's huge in Dallas.
Yeah, you got a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Got about 400 pounds of hairy goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Slippery, hairy goodness.
Yeah, 400 pounds, and I'd say at least 100 pounds of that is hair.
Yeah.
Right?
I wish. If I could get a haircut and that would solve that problem, and a shave.
You did get a haircut. We have the same haircut.
That's
we
right.
have matching hair. It's
yes.
like, it's called the five guard.
Yeah, four guard. You go, is there a five?
Yeah, I go a five.
And I do a four, and then I do a three on the sides. Just feather it up.
You know what's weird?
This conversation?
Yes. Yumi says that she can smell a new haircut. You know how you can smell a freshly cut lawn?
Uh-huh.
She says she can smell a new haircut, and I'm like, no one else on the planet can. We even looked it up. There's no reference on the entire internets to smelling a new haircut, right?
Maybe she's a super taster smeller.
I was going to say, I don't think that that translates to taste, Chuck.
Okay.
But.
Is that her segue?
I think that works, kind of, right? I mean, consider this. You know when you've ever smelled something?
Uh-huh.
And you're like, I know what that would taste like. But it wouldn't taste like that. But you can tell how something
sure.
would taste or how you would imagine it would taste.
Right.
The reason it's so easy to imagine that is that smell and taste are as similar as any two senses are because they're both reactions to chemicals.
Yeah.
Right?
Olfactory is smell. Gustatory, we'll probably say those words, is taste.
Very nice.
I love gustatory.
And there are different types of molecules that react to different types of senses, right?
Yes.
So you have an odorant that we smell.
Right.
That reacts with our odor receptors.
Right.
And then you have gustants or tastants.
Yes.
I prefer tastants.
I'm a gustant guy.
Are you?
Uh-huh.
That react with the taste receptors on our tongue, right?
Right.
But because they're so close, you know, you really actually can't have one without the other, which if you've ever had, you know, any industrial accident associated with chlorine, you'll know that not only can you not smell any longer, you can't taste any longer.
Yeah. Or that's why food tastes weird when you have a cold.
Mm-hmm. Like Patty and Selma. They had an accident. I can't remember
right.
what happened, but they everything tastes like cardboard to them. It was like this offhanded thing they said in The Simpsons, but it, like after it sunk in, I'm like, that's the most depressing thing I've ever
right.
heard. Yeah.
They were big smokers, too.
Yeah.
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 I guess that was my Patty and Selma. Since you mentioned it, we should go ahead and point out a little factoid here that worms and other invertebrates, actually, there's no distinction between taste and smell.
Yeah. They're like, why put any kind of division up? We're just going to call it all one thing. But
my head looks like my butt, so what's the difference?
Right. They distinguish, though, between volatile and non-volatile organic compounds.
Right.
Right? Which means that if you paint a room and yeah. put a worm in it, it knows that you just painted that room.
Right. Or if you got your hair cut.
Right.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So I guess we should talk about these GRCs, gustatory receptor cells, taste buds. That's kind of where it all happens.
It is. And, you know, the taste buds are the little, oh, I guess they're part of the little bumps on your tongue.
Well, yeah, it's actually under that.
Yeah. Well,
isn't that how that works?
It's wrapped up in a package, right?
Yeah, it looks like a little spring onion, like the butt of a spring onion. Or a radish. It looks like a radish.
It does.
Or a beet.
It looks like one of those. Maybe even a weird garlic. Or, you know what it looks like here?
Looks like a hot air balloon.
It looks like one of those boxing
things. Speed bag.
Yes. Nice, Chuck. Within this little, what's called a papilla.
Papilla. Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to say it like that.
Sure.
Within that, there's 50 taste receptors, and they're generally specialized taste receptors, right? And they're going to be the same kind of taste receptor in every papilla.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got 50 of those, some basal cells, which are skin cells. They produce skin cells, right?
Yeah, not basil is in the plant. That would be great if I had basil that lived in my tongue at all times.
You would be turned on.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, that's right. It's an aphrodisiac for men.
Yes. Just for men gel.
Wouldn't that be great if we were actually sponsored by things and we just worked them in like that?
Yeah, it's called product placement.
Right. Yeah,
didn't we do one on that?
We did.
So you have about 50 receptors in this little papillae, some basal cells, and you have a little, each receptor cell has a little hair sticking out of it.
Yeah, a gustatory hair.
Right.
It's not Italian, though.
No, but all of it does sound Italian.
That's, from what I gather from this photo rendition, is that that is what you actually see poking up on your tongue, right? The little round thing is actually the little gustatory hairs, isn't it?
That's what it looks like. It's coming out of the top of the speed bag.
Right.
And they come out of taste pores, and it's the gustatory hair where all the action's taking place, right?
Yeah, that's where flavor and taste, well, that's where taste starts.
Right. Say you put a bite of steak in your mouth, right?
Umami.
So the saliva
that's key.
Is breaking down the meat. It's the first step in breaking it down. And it's breaking it into these little molecules called tastants or...
gustants?
Yes.
Yes.
Depending on your preference. And these molecules bind to the saliva, are taken across the tongue, and they stick to the receptors that are generally designed to, if you believe in intelligent design, designed to... create the sensation that we call taste.
Or they just happen to match up if you don't believe in intelligent design.
Right, exactly.
Good luck.
Nice. And Chuckers, taste is much different from flavor, isn't it? Let's define taste and flavor because this is a big thing.
Yeah, flavor, I think Sarah Dowdy actually has stuff you missed in history class. Fine podcast. She wrote this and the way she put it, which I thought was great, was flavor is sort of like a full body, and we'll get into actually that stuff later with the gut cells, but flavor is a whole body experience.
Right.
It's all your senses, including smell, obviously, tactile. And she said that with spicy food, pain is factored in as one of the aspects of flavor.
Yeah.
I love that.
So taste is this tastant molecule wrapped up in your saliva smacking against a gustatory hair.
Yeah.
It sends a transmission to your brain.
Right.
And your brain encodes it and says, umami. Right?
right.
Or salty.
Right.
There's different voices for each taste, as I'm sure you know already.
Oh, yes. Don't ask me to do sour.
But that's just the... we will later. That's just the taste. The flavor is that the pressure that the steak puts on your tongue.
Right.
The tactile sensation of, you know, the kind of ends of the meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of dancing across your tongue.
Yeah.
Or if you like your steak rare, medium rare, like I do.
Me too.
That lump of like warmish, coldish, bloody flesh. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, pain too.
All of our vegetarian fans just turned off.
Right. Yeah.
They just are so disgusted right now.
But that whole sensation is flavor and all these different sensations are going to the brain and the brain's like, oh, steak.
Yeah. You know what I want to know? And actually just thought of this. What is the deal when you, like, eat a piece of cheese? Someone will tell me this, I'm sure. Like, you get a piece of sharp cheddar, and it feels like your jaw locks up. You ever have that with certain flavors?
No.
Really?
Your jaw lock? I know with, like, a really dill sour flavor, I'm like,
No, I'm talking about, Jerry, have you ever had that with cheese? Jerry's asleep.
Jerry's like,
I'll put a piece of cheddar in my mouth, and my jaw just, like, clenches, like, noticeably clenches.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Jerry just said yes.
Jerry doesn't know what we're talking about at all.
Well, that may be, you know, we're going to talk about super tasters in a minute. There are different types of tasters, we found out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same for everyone, so maybe that's one of my, you know, my kinds.
Right, and here's a little spoiler about super tasters. The key to super tasters, they have more taste buds.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Boring.
Yeah. All right, so Chuck, there are, of course, what every school kid knows, are primary tastes, right?
Yeah, sweet, salty, sour, bitter.
Right, back in our day, that was it.
That's all the taste you get,
right,
Sonny.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And what was it? Salt, sweet, sour, bitter.
Yeah.
Right? And then what's funny, in the Western world, for a good century after a fifth taste was discovered, we still stuck to these four and didn't recognize that there was a fifth one.
Americans.
Right? Because the researcher was Japanese,
right,
and his work was never translated to English. So in about 1901, a Japanese researcher named Kikune Ikeda.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ikeda?
Ikeda.
Ikeda?
Yeah. In the early 1900s, he discovered something called umami, which means a delicious savory taste in Japanese, right?
Right. What he was doing was he was cooking some of that Japanese seaweed that we both love. And he was like, you know what? This is neither sweet, salty, bitter, or sour. So he started researching it, and he found out that he isolated the glutamic acid and found out that it had its own gustatory receptor. So he's like, this is legit.
Right.
Except and he said it in Japanese, which is the problem.
Right, yeah. And everybody was like, what did that guy just say?
Umami? What the heck is that?
Let's go back to the World's Fair in St. Louis.
Right. Have some ice cream.
Yeah. One of the reasons also that it was never really investigated over here is umami is much more of a flavor that is in Japanese dishes. Like you said, seaweed.
Right.
Huge. But also over here we have tomatoes and umami flavor.
Meat. Yeah.
Savory.
Sure.
Right? Ikeda's research was backed up in the West in 1985.
Yeah, a little later.
Yeah, when some researchers started to try to isolate the taste for monosodium glutamate. And remember, umami is glutamic acid, right?
Yes.
So glutamate, glutamic acid.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to isolate the flavor of MSG, which is a pretty distinct savory flavor.
Yeah.
And they found that no combination of the primary taste, bitter, sweet, salty, sour, could replicate MSG.
I wonder how they did that.
I don't know. There's a lot going on in flavor science that is fascinating.
Yeah. Yes. Huge.
Yes.
But it's, I'm curious. But they basically, you're right. They came away with nothing. All the combinations, they can't account for MSG and its magical properties of flavor and calories. And isn't it supposed to like make you feel full or something? You know what they say?
I don't know.
No.
With MSG?
Yeah, I thought that was the deal with, or maybe that was just an urban legend. People are like, you know, Chinese food, MSG makes you feel awful.
No, it makes you feel sick. It's called Chinese restaurant syndrome.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Chinese restaurant syndrome, I know with me, if I eat MSG,
uh-huh,
it feels like a claw is grabbing the top of my stomach.
Really?
It hurts so bad. It's a lot of people are allergic to MSG, and of course Chinese restaurants were famous for using it.
They don't use it a lot anymore, do they?
I don't think so. And most restaurants actually advertise whether or not they use it. Well, they advertise that they don't use it. They don't advertise like with MSG.
Right. Now it's MSG.
Seen as a bad thing.
Sure.
But remember, we got a listener mail in once from somebody whose family owned a bunch of Chinese restaurants. And was like, you guys talk about Chinese restaurant syndrome because MSG is found in like snack chips or, you know.
And we get all the blame.
Right. And it's not just Chinese restaurants. And a lot of Chinese restaurants have stopped using MSG. So there you go, listener.
We satisfied that two-year-old listener mail.
Yeah,
just
we
now.
Finally get around to it. And did you hear what a pro I was? I didn't cite the snack chip that he used as an example. That's how good we're getting.
Wow.
Yeah.
My mind is blown right now.
Mine too.
So, like you said, in 2002, actually, is when Ikeda's study was finally translated into English.
Right.
So many years even after 1985.
So they're
like, oh. Oh, yeah, right. So from that point, umami was accepted as the official fifth taste, savory.
Right. And then, but think about it. So that's like a century because the taste map, which we'll talk about, the tongue map.
Yeah, it's a bunk.
That was established in 1901, about the time that Ikeda was coming up with the umami.
Right.
But it was just that sweet, sour, salty, bitter. Right.
Right.
So for a century, the taste map didn't change.
Right.
And then in 2002, umami's accepted in the West, finally, right? And then it seems like the floodgates open, right? All of a sudden, like, they're like, well, wait a minute. If there's a fifth taste, maybe we haven't been paying enough attention. Like, fat is apparently now the sixth primary taste, right?
Leave it to the French. There are new studies now, Joshers, that says that well, they think they've identified fat as its own thing, like humans have a taste for fat, and that the funny thing I thought, if you have a high sensitivity to that taste, you eat less fatty foods.
You know, Chuck, that is, I think, a really, that's something that's going to become what gets Taste Research its funding.
Is obesity and diabetes and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, because what they found is people who are, when you're talking about super tasters who taste sweet things tend to eat less.
Yeah.
Tasters who, a lot of people don't really detect the fat as mm-hmm. much. People who do have less body fat, you said, lower body mass index.
Yeah.
So you don't eat the foods that you taste the most.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, they did the lady did the one study on super tasters, and I think she found that women in their 40s at least, I guess that was her set, was they were, they gained less weight or they were, you know, slimmer.
Right.
Than non-super tasters. But she didn't find...
Because they were eating less of it.
Yeah, but she didn't find that in men, which I thought was odd. I guess men are just like...
We just shovel whatever in our mouth.
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, you want me to lose some weight? Watch, I'll just drink water for a day and there's 50 pounds shed.
Right.
Yeah. So, Chuck, now it's 2010.
Yes.
And if you stick out your tongue, please stick out your tongue, Chuck.
You know, I bit my tongue almost all the way off when I was a kid.
Oh, I see that. Wow. It's like Frankenstein's tongue.
Yeah, sort of.
So, all right, Chuck, stick out your tongue, please.
Still?
Yeah. So we've got umami.
Uh-huh.
We've got sweet.
Yeah.
Sour.
Uh-huh.
Bitter.
Yeah.
Salty.
Yeah.
Fatty.
Yeah.
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 And a lot, it looks like the that's a pretty fat tongue, Chuck.
Yeah. It's not thick, though.
Look at how fat I kind of.
This is worse than the beep boop.
I like the beep boop. And we also have, they've recently discovered that we actually have specialized receptor cells that detect carbon dioxide.
Yeah. Well, should we finish the tongue map real quick at least and why it's bunk?
Sure.
Because you were pointing, but people can't see you point, Josh. So the classic tongue map says that bitter is in the back, sour is on the side, salty is on the front edge, sweet is on the tip. And umami, they're throwing on the posterior and saying that. That's where that is.
Yeah, they're like, that real estate's open. That's where we'll put umami.
Stake your claim.
But they've also found that that there's fat somewhere, has to go in there somewhere, right?
Yeah, do they know where that is yet? Is it still new?
Yeah, it's too new from what I understand, right?
Right.
But I think it's not just, I think it's going to take the tongue map away. That's going to be done away with because there are primary tastes, certainly, but they're finding that, you know, the whole tongue map when it was invented in 1901
by D.P. Hannig.
Yeah, a German researcher. Basically, what he did was to say areas of low sensitivity were depicted like there was no sensitivity. Like there's those lines that, like, there's actual borders.
Right.
And yes, maybe this area of the tongue is higher in receptor cells for umami or sweet or bitter, but that doesn't mean that it's not found elsewhere on the tongue as well.
Yeah.
And so a lot of tastes are a mixture of all of these, number one.
Well, sure. And all he did was interview people.
He did.
Which I thought was odd.
Yeah. His research was backed up in 1974 by Virginia Collings, right?
Well, sort of backed up and sort of not.
Well, it was kind of like revised, I guess. It's like, yes, he was right in saying, like, this area has higher in sweet receptors than this area. So you could conceivably put a tongue map, but maybe it was just kind of pushed the wrong way. And that
there's overlap.
Yeah. Collings was the one who was saying, like, this is a lot. There's a lot of interplay going on, including CO2. Let's get back. Can we talk about CO2 finally?
Now is the time. That's pretty cool. I mean, you sent me this over the emails a couple of days ago.
Right.
And said, dude, you tapped me on the head and said, dude, you know that bubbly stuff? You think that's what's making that taste in your mouth, and it's not.
No, actually, we have a gene that expresses an enzyme that's meant to detect carbon dioxide in the bloodstream, right? So
yes.
We can break it down into useful forms.
Right.
And they've forever, basically, we thought that anytime we drank a carbonated drink, it was the popping of the little bubbles on our tongue that created that sensation.
Uh-huh.
Not so fast. They have put people in a pressurized chamber, hyperbaric chamber, right?
No bubbles.
And given them soda that, has no bubbles present, and people could still detect the carbon dioxide taste.
Yeah.
So there's yet another taste. There's no place on the tongue map for carbon dioxide, and yet there's specialized receptor cells for detecting it, right?
Yeah. Well, because they, like everything else, they said, this is interesting. Let's get some mice and genetically make them different and weird and test them out.
Right.
And they did that, and they found it was the same receptor as sour, right?
Yes. What they the sour receptor basically doubles as a CO2 detector as well.
They remove that in mice.
Yeah. And also they put a sensor into one of their nerves, which is pretty interesting in and of itself that we can do that.
I know. It's crazy.
So those combination, those series of studies led to this discovery that we have CO2 detectors.
And what an important discovery that is.
Right. And Chuck, it is.
Is it?
I think so.
What does it mean?
Well, that's the whole thing. It leads you to the question, Chuck, why do we have taste anyway? There's one obvious answer is that we learn to eat by deriving pleasure from it, and we associate some tastes with they're pleasurable, right?
Well, yeah, but early man, it was a lot of times like warning systems.
Well, this is the less obvious answer, right?
Yeah, like if they ate something sweet, they like appealed to them. It's it gives them a lot of calories, and so that's a good thing. If they tasted something really bitter, it might be poisonous,
right?
So you should spit that out,
right? Sour could be spoiled,
sure.
Something that was rotten,
or it could be a sweet and sour candy, which is yummy.
Right.
If you're early man.
Right. And with early man, we had yet to figure out a way to encode ideas and warnings about, like, not to eat something through, the written word. So we had to use our taste senses on our own.
And we still, that's what's so cool. That's why I love evolution. All these years later, that's why we're still attracted to sweet things. Mm-hmm. Because that was survival. It gave you calories to live, basically food energy.
Right. But we have also gotten to the point where we are, you could say, a reasonably fat society here in the U.S. And you mix that together with health consciousness or self-consciousness, especially.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have artificial sweeteners, which you would think is good for your body. But they found that there's a correlation between using artificial sweeteners,
right,
and type 2 diabetes, right? And they figured out through this investigation, they figured out that there are taste cells elsewhere in the body. It's not just the tongue. And we're getting this idea that not only are tastes, they're more primary tastes than we realize. Tastes are interplays of different receptor cells.
Right.
And there's taste cells elsewhere in the body, in the gut specifically, but also probably in the pancreas, in the liver, in other areas. So these molecules that are bound with saliva and that enter the gut, they start sending out other signals rather than meaty.
Right. Like we were saying that the like a bitter taste might be something poisonous. Sometimes you'll eat something poisonous and it gets past the old tongue,
right,
and you swallow it, and that's when the gut's taste cells kick in, and that's why you might, like, it might spur vomiting.
Right. It triggers your vomiting reaction.
Thank God.
Yeah. That's one way. With the type 2 diabetes, with the sweet receptors in the gut are signaled by something sweet.
Yeah.
They tell the blood to start absorbing insulin, right?
Yeah,
they
start.
They
it
tell
up.
The surrounding cells to start absorbing insulin, or glucose, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
To burn for energy.
Uh-huh.
So insulin, which actually, Chuck, you remember we've talked about before, and I think whenever we talked about longevity, insulin's like the worst thing for your body.
Right.
But we use it to go into cells to basically open the cells so glucose can go be burned.
Yeah.
But if the glucose doesn't arrive, if there's no sugar eaten,
right,
and it's just an artificial sweetener, that signal is still triggered.
But it's
the
false.
Insulin still goes and jams open your cells, but nothing gets burned.
Right.
And the insulin levels go up, and you have type 2 diabetes.
So that's the tie between drinking like a diet soda
and
potentially leading to diabetes.
Right, but isn't that interesting that we've figured out something new about taste, that it's all over?
I know.
It's an all-over sensation is what they're coming up with, right?
That's crazy.
So what else do we have, Chuckers?
Well, I think we finally need to just map out the super taster thing just a little bit more.
Right.
Because super tasters are pretty cool, and how it all happened is really cool. Shall I tell the story?
I'd like to hear the story, Chuck.
Way back in the 1930s, a scientist named Arthur Fox from DuPont was pouring some, and this is like every like OSHA, this is the worst nightmare when they hear stories about this, laboratory stories like this. This dude was pouring some PTC. Do you want to say the long name?
I do, but I have to find it first.
I'm not prepared to say it.
It is phenylthiocarbamide.
Yeah. Very nice.
Thank you.
So he was pouring some of this PTC, it's an organic compound, into a beaker, And the way he described it was, he said, it suddenly became a cloud that started shooting all over the room. And this is when OSHA's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And it basically filled up this room, and he was in there with his partner, and his buddy was like, it's awful. It's so bitter. And he was like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
That's not bitter. What do you mean? And then, you know, that triggered the conversation. Wait a minute. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You had a really awful reaction. And apparently, I've seen studies on YouTube. They don't use PTC anymore because it's dangerous.
Right.
But apparently it's so bitter. It's like the reactions are hysterical. So he goes home and he starts putting this stuff on his family's tongues and his friends' tongues to see if they react the same way. And he found that there's no rhyme or reason who it happens to, because it's a genetic trait.
Hmm.
And they said it's what they used to use this for. It's so specific of a genetic trait. They used to use it for paternity cases, like up through like the 1970s.
Holy cow.
Yeah. They said it's the most one of the most common Mendelian traits, right up there with like eye color and blood type, is whether or not PTC makes you like freak out with bitter.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's a terrible test.
Yeah.
So, and it's a specific gene. There's a dominant allele for the TAS2R28 gene, right?
Yes.
They've isolated that?
Yeah, 70% of people, this is what's weird, 70% gets the bitter taste, 58% of Australians, and 98% of Native Americans in both North and South America. Almost all of them have that reaction.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I don't even know what it means. I just thought it was interesting.
So in 1991, there was a researcher from Yale who coined the term super tasters, right?
Yes.
And it's not just bitter, and it's not just people who react to PTC or PCP.
Yeah.
Right?
Everyone reacts to PCP.
Yeah, but whether or not you beat up 10 cops, I think, is probably,
sure.
That's a paternity test, too.
Right.
Let's see how you react to PCP.
Right.
It's not just this bitter taste, right? You can have a super taster who really tastes sweet things.
Right.
Really tastes umami. Really, it's a primary taste, right?
Yeah.
That's just heightened. And like we said, the spoiler is you just generally have more of these papilles.
Yeah.
You have more taste buds of a certain type than other people.
Yeah, and it can be a good thing. Like, to have a heightened sense can be good in certain respects, but it also apparently, like coffee and Brussels sprouts and really sweet and spicy things, super tasters can't handle that a lot of times. So it's a curse as well as a blessing.
Yeah.
I would say.
I can't handle broccoli, but it has nothing to do with taste.
You know, I like all vegetables. I've been eating beets like crazy lately.
Yeah? Ever since that beet salad?
Yeah, I've been making my own beet salad.
Yeah.
I've been grilling beets, a little balsam, a little olive oil.
I have not had that. I'll have to try it.
Put it on the grill, and then the next day you're going to think you need to go to the doctor, but it's just the beets. That's all I'll say.
Okay. So that's pretty much it. Like we said, if you're a super taster also, it supports that that aversion to foods that you can taste more than other people.
Yeah.
Super tasters who are sensitive to sweet tend to eat less sweets.
Yeah.
And et cetera.
But they also avoid leafy greens, which is not good.
No, you got to have that.
Yeah.
Especially
if you're
pregnant.
Actually, we forgot to mention, they don't use PTC anymore, but they do use PROP as the test now.
Which is
it's a synthetic compound. They just call it PROP.
Right, and they use it in thyroid medicine, right?
Yeah, but now that's the standard super taster test to see if you have that bitter reaction to that.
So they just give you thyroid medicine.
Or they drop some PROP on your tongue. I don't know. Right. I don't know how it works.
Weird. And then lastly, Chuck, the answer to why a lot of stuff tastes like chicken?
I don't know this. Surprise me.
They have, at least at Cornell, using gas chromatography, they have isolated 1,000 concentrations, chemical concentrations.
And 900 of them are chicken?
That contain tastants, that the human tongue can taste, or that the human brain can sense as taste. And they used to think it was hundreds of thousands. They're like, nope, it's just thousands. And chicken is like 999 of them.
Really?
Well, I made up the chicken part. That's my theory.
Okay.
My theory is that it's because there's only 1,000 instead of 100,000. There's your answer right there.
Yeah.
And then lastly, Chuck, that also makes me wonder if there's 1,000 chemicals.
Uh-huh.
And they used to think it was hundreds of thousands. So there's hundreds of thousands of chemicals out there, but we can only taste 1,000. It's kind of like light, you know? We can only see within a certain band of light.
Sure.
It makes you wonder how things that we can't taste. you just chew on that one. And if you want to know more about taste,
wow,
go to howstuffworks.com where you can type the word taste in the handy search bar. And also, this is, I think, requisite listening for a molecular gastronomy podcast that we'll do sometime in the future, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right, let's
I'd
do
love
it.
To do one on that.
All right, Chuck, then you know what time it is, right?
Listener mail, or are we doing some sort of Facebook or anything? Oh, wait. We got our big big announcement we
yes.
got to do.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for reminding us.
Go ahead.
Our Atlanta event, right?
Yeah, we're going to do an Atlanta thing similar to what we did in New York.
Yes.
Because we got called out by all the Atlanta folks. We're like, you go to New York, New York. What about Atlanta?
Yeah. Well, we're like...
Yeah, we kind of have to.
So, yeah, we're going to do trivia night, right?
Yeah.
All comers can come take us on.
Yeah.
We'll figure out the details, but we're looking for venues still.
Yeah, we could use you people for details. If you are in Atlanta and you have some connections with what might be a good venue
mm-hmm.
to host our trivia, please get in touch with us.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll keep you posted. If you have any suggestions, comments, whatever about the Atlanta thing, email us. And now, Chuck.
Well, it should be sometime in August, we should point out.
Okay.
Very nice. We don't have a lockdown yet, but look for it in the next, like, 6 weeks.
Right. Now, listener mail, right?
Yeah. All right, Josh, I'm going to call this rare shout-outs because we don't do these very often.
Shouts out.
Shouts out. Shouts outs.
I'm like the new William Sapphire.
Hi, Josh and Chuck. My husband and I are huge fans of your podcast. We eagerly wait every Tuesday and Thursday so we can hear what you have to say. I guess it proves you're fans.
Yeah.
Now you can be my heroes as well. Next Saturday, July 17th, is my husband's 24th B-Day.
Chuck, this is very kind of you.
I know. We don't do this very often. We just bought our first house. He made me promise not to buy him anything, I guess, because they just spent all their money on a house.
Yeah.
I wonder if you'd give him a shout. I know you don't do this often, so let me tell you why he's cool enough to get a one-of-a-kind birthday greeting. His name is DJ Vile. Seriously, he's in your Facebook group. V-I-L-E, DJ Vile. And I don't think
that's... Is he a DJ?
No, I think that's his name. His name's like Donald James Vile or something.
Well, if he ever becomes a DJ, then...
He's all set.
Yeah. He's like, just call me.
He listens to every one of your podcasts. Eh. He's a huge Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
Eh.
This what do you mean, one, eh?
Well, I mean, those are good, but that's not a reason to shout out.
Okay.
But these are.
Okay.
He ran a 10K as Green Man.
I know, I saw that.
Wow.
Is that a root suit?
It was either, yeah, I think Green Man and the Root Suit are one and the same.
Okay.
So he actually ran a full 10K as Green Man.
Yeah.
And lastly, he'll be spending his birthday driving to present his research entitled this, Interfraction Variability of Lung Tumor Motion Using 4D Cone Beam CT at a physicist medical conference in Philly. And this dude is 24 years old and he's doing that.
I know. My brain is melted.
So, with that... On the 17th, happy birthday, DJ Vile.
Happy birthday, DJ Vile. Thank you very much for listening.
And Julie, your wife, sounds like a very kind woman.
She does. And yes. Good luck presenting your findings, and
yeah.
Best wishes for your new home.
Mazel tov.
All right, Chuck, thank you for the listener mail. Now it's time for shout out to Kiva.
Kiva.org/team/stuffyoushouldknow, or... You just go to community, you can search Stuff You Should Know.
Right.
Join our Kiva team. We are on a mission to raise $250,000 in loans.
And we're making it, and we're doing it with how many? We have hundreds of thousands of Stuff You Should Know listeners.
Yeah.
We have like 2,000 and change members on the Kiva team.
Yeah,
right?
So there's like 180,000 of you out there that are really disappointing us.
Right. And there's just this, but on the same token, we're very, very proud of the 2,000 and
yes.
change who are members of this Stuff You Should Know yeah. Kiva team.
Star
because
student.
So far, they've raised 170,000 and then some.
Yeah.
So far. And
we're
included.
On
the way to,
yes.
Yeah, we are included, but there's people on there who put us to shame.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're like heading it up on their own, too.
Yeah, there's some really great people on there. Somebody was like, somebody got a bonus at work and made a loan. Somebody, I think an auto repair wasn't as much as they thought, so they used the difference on Kiva. They
yeah.
made a loan on Kiva.
I'm
like
not
people that,
that
just
person.
Make us look yeah. like vile.
Like I
DJ
find
vile.
$20 on the ground, and like if I'm not hungry, I might think about not spending it on beer and giving it to Kiva.
I have a similar problem.
Yeah.
So. Thumbs up to our Stuff You Should Know Kiva team. If you want kudos from us, you can join it yourself. Again, that's www.kiva.org facebook.com/team/stuffyoushouldknow. It's a very welcoming community of people, right?
Great people.
We're on Facebook. We have a Facebook page with 12,000 and then some fans, and we are extremely active on it.
Yeah, it's actually a fun Facebook page.
Right. I should say Chuck is way more active than I am, but
Will you hold on the Twitter thing?
Yeah, I do Twitter. But we're both on there, but Chuck is really, really good about responding to people's comments and questions and stuff. So if you want to interact with us, especially Chuck, you can go to facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. We're also on Twitter, SYSK Podcast. You can follow us in our stupid musings, and we get caught up in hoaxes and stuff and have to eat crow thanks to me.
Right, or we get told you got to take that down. You can't say that.
Right, yeah. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to get everybody in trouble. And then what's the last thing? There was one other thing.
I can't think of any.
T-shirts.
Yeah.
The t-shirt contest is over. We have five winners, and you can buy every single one of these awesome t-shirts, five different Stuff You Should Know designs at the Discovery Store.
Uh-huh.
Go to store.discovery.com and search Stuff You Should Know, and it'll bring up all five t-shirts.
Yes.
And that's it, man.
That's it.
If you have anything cool to say to us, we want to hear it, put it in an email, send it to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.